Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:52 p.m. that is Central Time, and today is July 13th. I thought we'd kick off with the Nasdaq because it got up and tested the 15,000 point level today, which is a bit of a round number, and we also know that it paused at the 14,000 level, paused around the 13,000, paused around 12,000, so it's not unreasonable to anticipate that it might pause around this level. And it's being aided, or at least that conclusion is being aided by the continued advance in yields. So only last week people were still anticipating that yields were going to compress further, that the reflation trade was dead, and that there was obviously a significant new demand case for bonds, and there were significant inflows into bond funds last week, and some of that money, which we might describe as hot money, starting to come back out. And the auction of new 30-year debt didn't do particularly well in here today, so yields are back on the rise. And then we also had CPI figures that came out way stronger than anticipated. And we're going to continue to have these kinds of loopy economic figures for at least the balance of the year, because we're still in an environment where there are extraordinary conditions and big discrepancies in how you can measure activity. And a lot of the things that people would normally have anticipated and would have relied on to make forecasts just are not all that reliable. So the price of used cars has accelerated higher, and a good part of the reason for that is because of the lack of computer chips. And this supply chain problem, where in today's world there are chips in everything, is certainly having an impact. Now, the shortage of chips in certain portions of the market is starting to ease up, but there's no evidence of it easing up just yet in the automotive sector. So that is putting pressure on prices. It's feeding through into demand for used vehicles, and there are fewer of them around. That's feeding through into demand for rental cars. There are fewer of those around because they didn't purchase cars last year. And because of the near bankruptcies of companies like Hertz, then they sold off a lot of their cars last year. So they don't have the vehicles. And that is translating into demand for U-Hauls. I know a number of people that they went on vacation over the last month, and what they saw in hotel parking lots were U-Haul trucks, because it was the only rental vehicle available to them. So all of that is contributing to inflationary pressures. Then of course we have lodging, and lodgings have been extraordinarily affected by the response to the pandemic because of the moratorium on evictions. So it's likely that following that kind of response or that kind of experience, then landlords will be pickier about who they accept as tenants. So that's going to drive up rentals. Demand for rentals will be high because of the significant migration, because of people wanting to live their best life. And then there'll be less supply because landlords will be more picky. That'll push up prices, and that also feeds through into inflation. And that is going to take time to iron out. When you have restaurants offering signing bonuses because they simply cannot get the people, and anyone who's been to restaurants of late, particularly over the last 6 weeks, will have experienced, I think, subpar service. What I find particularly interesting is, and I guess because we're still waiting on our kitchen appliances to be delivered, so we've been eating out every night for the last 2 months. So back when there was still a fear of contracting the virus and the penetration of vaccines was not as pronounced, then service in restaurants was better. But now that demand is picking back up, and then there aren't enough of people working, that service has actually taken a significant hit. And restaurants are suffering as a result of it. And the number of items that they have to comp because somebody has made a mess up of orders has certainly increased. So when we think about what this is, what kind of impact this is having, it's creating a lot of stress and it's contributing to wage growth. And companies are going to have to, and are fine. It's not like they have a choice, and it's more of a pull factor than a push factor, because they find themselves paying up to try and attract better qualified or harder working or more experienced workforces. So that's also contributing to inflationary pressures. And when we think then about whether this is transitory or not, it's going to be a big discussion, because when we look at the semiconductor sector, well, that is probably going to be fixed within the next 6 months to a year. So that might be considered to be a medium-term consideration. But the labor force issue is a little different, because we've had significant migration, which means that a lot of people who might ordinarily have worked and been willing to accept a lower standard of life for the chance to live in an exciting place like a big city, well, they're less inclined to accept that now. We also know that the millennial generation, they migrated to the cities after the financial crisis, and they migrated en masse to smaller cities and to the suburbs during the pandemic, because they're at prime family for formation ages. So they're now much more concerned with schooling and a better quality of life than they would have been 13, 14 years ago, when many of them were in their early 20s and much more involved in living the fast life. So that's a significant migration of workers from the fast casual sector. So this is obviously a factor. Then, of course, you have the significant migration of older people out of the workforce into retirement. And as long as their retirement savings are intact, well, they're not going to be encouraged back into the workforce. And most, and even if they do go on to develop new businesses, then that will be in a different part of the country or a different sector. So that's something that is an inflationary pressure with a long tail. And it's one of the primary reasons why people think that after a pandemic, then we get labor getting more power. So when labor gets more power, interest rates rise. And that's exactly what we're seeing. So all of that aside, there was less demand for bond yields in here today, for bonds, so yields are rising, and this is a clear bounce from the region of the trend mean, and a countervailing downward dynamic would be required to question potential for additional moves higher in the bond yield. And of course, everything is priced off of the bond yield. So the Nasdaq getting up to 15,000, it does look like we're due some consolidation, and a reversion back to the mean would not be beyond the bounds of possibility. Then, of course, the big question is, well, what's going to happen with the massive quantity of savings that are outstanding? There are two arguments about this. The first is that after a pandemic, the precautionary savings rate stays high, because people want to save money in the event that they are going to be caught in the same situation in future. But the one thing that's different about this pandemic has been the monetary and fiscal response. And the one thing that people have learned is that you don't need to have the precautionary savings. In fact, you might be better off not having them, because the government will then ensure that you're made whole. So I suspect that we are going to see continued growth in spending. And that again is where the inflationary argument comes from. And one thing that I think is quite likely is that instead of precautionary saving, we might have precautionary spending. And it is the in anticipation of higher prices that people make these kinds of spending decisions. And that's a significant psychological change. So when people start making these kinds of decisions, then that also contributes to an inflationary bias. So we can also then think about the commodity complex. Gold prices were able to eke out a positive move in here today, but the most important thing is it continues to hold this move above $1,800, and a clear upward dynamic would certainly bolster the view that this is a higher reaction low. The other side of that equation, of course, is if we get a clear downward dynamic, well then that would be a rather negative outcome. So this kind of inert trading is not going to last indefinitely. But then we can also think about the rest of the commodity complex, and oil prices were steady in here today and up about a dollar, so certainly a short-term low. We continue to see that the global economy is on a recovery trajectory, and that is despite the fact that we can think about the weakness in the Thai baht, which had been one of the strongest currencies around last year, and it's the dollar has been trending higher against it now for the last few months. So this is a significant weakening of the currency. The Philippine peso, having also been one of the stalwarts during the pandemic, has weakened significantly over the course of the last month. So this is at least a partial response to the spreading of the Delta variant around the ASEAN region. And the Indonesian market was a little weaker in here today, so I think there is the possibility here that we're going to see a bout of weakness come through in these emerging markets. And then, of course, we have the continued steady environment on the dollar index, and it was in reasonably dynamic territory in here today. So rising yields are certainly something that are bolstering the outlook for the US dollar. And having pulled back in the last couple of days of last week, we've had a significant rebound from the 92 area in here today. So currencies continue to trade around this Delta variant or coronavirus news. And with downward pressure coming through in emerging market currencies, then and then the correlation that that has with the demand from investors for a hedge against the virus, well, then they're just betting on the dollar over those emerging market currencies. The renminbi was a little bit steadier in here today, and the H-share index was up and appears now to be likely to unwind its short-term oversold condition and finding support in the region of this psychological 10,000 level. And it's done that on plenty of occasions in the past, so there's certainly the scope here for a reversion or back up towards the 11,000 level. But then, of course, the big question is, when will the next surprise drop from the new regulators that China has created for the technology sector? The valuations on Chinese stocks are attractive, and the relative strength of the currency is also something that's attracting investors, but the governance is obviously something that is a significant challenge, and it's where there are likely to continue to be a significant number of surprises. The other big market where governance is coming into focus is South Africa, and the rand was weaker in here today, and the dollar is has strengthened through 14. It's now testing the sequence of lower rally highs in the region of the trend mean. So this is the area where if the rand is going to bounce, it would be doing it soon. But what's at risk here is the independence of the judiciary. And that has been the most significant fundamental and governance support for the South African economy. When we think about governance, it's an independent press, a free press, respect for minority shareholder rights, and an independent judiciary are the foundations for anyone to make an investment anywhere. And the independent judiciary is something that has been a hallmark of governance in South Africa. And now, despite the incredible corruption that we have in the political classes, and which feeds through into the corporate classes, the fact that you've had an independent judiciary has at least helped to temper some of the worst proclivities of corrupt people. But the contempt of court from Jacob Zuma, and the fact that he has been imprisoned and that has set off riots, well, that has the potential to turn into a powder keg. And then we also have the fact that commodity prices, and particularly in the agricultural sector, are beginning to rebound. Now, we've had this news from the UN that there were something in the region of 800 million people were undernourished in 2020. So that's a pretty extraordinary set of conditions. And then we can think about the fact that we've had this significant ramp up in food prices over the course of the last year. We've had a significant drawdown, and now there's evidence of support coming through in the region of the trend mean for soybeans, for wheat, and also for corn. So this has the potential to be a first step above the base. And with droughts in the western portion of the USA, and with the bigger questions about droughts in South America, then the question here is not so much about whether prices are going to come all the way back down. That's unlikely in the short term, but rather it's how far are they going to rally, and how long will it be before droughts break? A lot of this will be blamed on climate change, and the reason for it is rather irrelevant because we've had, in fact, I would say it's probably more correct to say that we've had a period of time which has been particularly benign for agricultural products over the course of the last decade. There haven't been a lot of instances of droughts and that have destroyed crops, and it's really been more about a growing demand story. One of the primary reasons why commodity prices are more expensive today than they were prior to 2000 is because Europe and the USA stopped subsidizing their farmers. So if we want to solve the food problem, we need to produce more. And if we want to produce more, well, then we need to go to the most fertile places in the world where they have the most advanced technology, and then encourage those farmers to produce more. But that seems to be extremely unlikely. And instead, we're going to remain in this volatile price environment overall. But the most important thing is that higher food prices are a causal factor in political rebellions. And it is easy to think about Cuba as a place which has been ripe for political disquiet, but the introduction of a 3G network there has allowed people to organize, and they're organizing because food prices are rising. So rising food prices have been one of the clearest causal effects in social unrest. It was certainly true in the Arab Spring, so Cuba is certainly looking like an area which is susceptible to change, and these higher food prices are going to have knock-on effects around the world. And of course, that is also something that will damage the perception of emerging markets in the eyes of investors. So it's likely that emerging markets will underperform as long as yields and the dollar are rising. And when the dollar rolls over and the coronavirus is vanquished, well then it's likely that emerging markets will return to fashion in a significant manner. But we're perhaps not quite there yet. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.